And welcome back to That's Life with Mark Snyder. Joining us now on the line, we watched him as a kid. You know, it's hard to believe when we found out the other day that it was Johnny Crawford's birthday. We looked up how old he was. It made us all feel old. But Johnny was, of course, Mark McCain on The Rifleman, and I grew up watching that show, loved that show. And, of course, he had a number of hits. And then he went into other things, and now he's coming back with more music. And he's on with us right now on the entertainment line. Hi, Johnny.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. It's nice to have you on the show with us.
Good to be there.
I know that you got a new CD coming out. It's not out yet, though. It's going to be out when, in a couple months or a month? Or
well, hopefully by June.
Yeah.
And we have a film coming out the end of May, May 28th. Film is opening. It's called The 13th Floor.
Uh-huh.
And it's... you know, I haven't actually seen the film yet. I worked on it about a year ago, and but we're on the soundtrack and we're on camera. When I say we, I mean myself and my band, and it's supposed to be 1937 when we're on camera, and the movie goes back and forth between the present and 1937. It's a science fiction adventure mystery, and it's a great script, and I can't wait to see it.
Now, is it going to be released on video or in the theaters?
It's going to be in the theaters.
Really? And the name of the movie again?
The 13th Floor.
The 13th Floor.
Mm-hmm.
And do we know who the stars are of the movie and all that kind of stuff?
You know, the actors... it's just ridiculous that I don't know more about it, but I'm so busy with other things, well, I've kind of forgotten about the movie. You know?
Well, you're going to have a CD coming out to coincide with the release of the movie?
Yeah.
And we'll have some of the tracks that are on the movie.
I'm going to have four tracks on the film.
Yeah.
And and we actually provide the music for another band that's on camera in one scene, and then we're on camera for the other three songs.
Huh. You know, it's interesting, when I was looking at your bio and stuff and checking out what you did, we just had on Bob Keane on the show a little while ago who talked about you, signing you for his Delphi Records. Mm-hmm. And I learned one thing about you that I didn't know. You were actually one of the original Musketeers on Walt Disney?
That's right.
So that was the first thing you did?
Well, no. I was, actually that was my first comeback.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I made a comeback at nine.
Oh,
but, no, I was. My father was a film editor at Columbia Studios, and the family had always been in show business for, you know, three generations. Well, I guess I was a third generation, and so I wanted to get my feet in there too. And I used to always ask my dad to put me in the movies, you know, when I was real little, and so. Seems funny, you know, to say that, but he would try to, you know, when they were shooting a film that required atmosphere, meaning a lot of extras,
mm-hmm.
I would get a day off from school and get to be an extra in a film at Columbia. And I was in the background, I guess, in maybe a dozen films before things started happening. My Sunday school teacher was an agent, and she started sending me on interviews, and I went on many, many interviews. My mother got real tired of giving up her day to drive me and my brother to interviews, and wanted to stop doing it, and because I wasn't getting anything. I was kind of bashful. I wanted to be on film, but I was too bashful in an office, you know, talking to strangers, so I didn't make a very good impression, I guess. And I didn't really get anything until one day in 1955 when I was, I had two callbacks. One was for a film at Fox, I think, or MGM. And that was Bus Stop.
Oh, wow.
And the other thing was The Musketeers at Disney. And I didn't get bussed up, but I got the Basketeers.
Was that fun to work on that?
It was just a dream. I was a 9-year-old kid who loved, you know, singing and dancing, and that's what I got to do. And I was doing it at Disney Studios. This is before Disneyland. And I thought it was the most wonderful place in the world. And I just loved it. I loved being around all those talented kids.
Did you become friendly with any of them?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We used to hang out at the studio and try to disrupt business. You know, we sort of took over the studio, ran all over, and they finally got tired of hunting us down and getting complaints, I guess, from the employees in the studio that we were, you know, in their hair. We'd just walk into offices and, you know, what goes on here? You know? So they would start rounding us up after school. We had to do our schooling. And if we weren't actually working or rehearsing something, which was not often, actually, they always had us rehearsing some deal.
How long did you stay?
There were moments when we didn't, why they decided to put us in a theater and show us cartoons. So we got to see a lot of great prints.
How long did you stay with Musketeers?
I was just the first season.
That's it?
Yeah.
Was there any reason why you weren't back again, or?
They cut back. They had 24 Musketeers to begin with. And they decided they could only handle 12.
They were already downsizing, huh?
Yeah. So I think that we were just more than they could handle, you know. We were pretty wild.
So what did you do in the intervening years? You had 4 years before you signed up for Rifleman.
It was actually just 3 years.
3 years, okay.
And I did a lot of work. After the Musketeers, I was one of the ones that they let go, which was just crushing. I was really distraught for that. I started getting work because I had a good credit. When I went into interviews, I had more confidence now, having been working for a season, and I had something to talk about. And also, I looked very sad. So I started getting these dramatic roles. I did a Lux Video Theater in the beginning of 1956 and played a French refugee. And my mother's French piano teacher helped me with my accent. So I suddenly became typecast as a French refugee or a European refugee, you know. So I started working. Pretty soon I was just doing things every week. There was a lot of work on television in those days, even though there were only three networks. There were no primetime movies in those days. It was all half-hour television and a lot of dramatic shows.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't many 9-year-olds or 10-year-olds that, you know, had experience. And the more I worked, the more I became confident, and I really loved it. I really did. Then one day I got it. I went on an interview after school with my mother at the old Hal Roach Studios in Culver City, and it was for a series, and it was a Western. And I thought, oh, wouldn't that be great? I loved Westerns, and I wanted to do a series. So we did the pilot for The Rifleman, and then we found out that it had been sold to a sponsor and a network, and we started shooting the actual series in the summer of 1958.
Wow. Now, this is amazing because it was on ABC, and I know I was one of those people who used to watch every week. It was a great show. It always had a nice moral structure to it.
Yeah.
And you played Mark McCain, Chuck Connors' son. What was Chuck like to work with?
He was terrific. I mean, I just loved him. He was not at all like the character. He was a terrific actor, you know, but he was very outrageous guy. He was full of life and spunk and and he just would have me laughing all the time, you know.
Really? See, from us looking at the show, it seemed like he was a real serious kind of guy.
Yeah, no, anything but. He was a wild and crazy guy, and I really loved him. We were great friends, And he was not always a good influence on me. His character on the show was, but
yeah.
But he wasn't. He was a pretty tough guy. You know, he came from a poor Irish family in Brooklyn, and grew up in Brooklyn, and was quite an athlete, and had been a professional baseball player and professional basketball player.
Hey, he played for the Celtics.
That's right.
Yep.
And the first, I think the first player to break the backboard in a professional game.
Wow. But, so, you know, I mean, he played a tough guy on TV, too, but he had a soft side, obviously.
Oh, yeah. He was actually a very sensitive guy, but you wouldn't ever have guessed it, because in public and on the set, he was larger than life, and he was, you know, I should write a book about him. But there is a book. There has been a book written about him, and terrific book, and it's full of wonderful photographs.
You should write your own book.
Yeah, well, I should do a lot of things. But
right. I remember talking... Years ago, I remember talking to Dwayne Hickman about Dobie Gillis, and I said to him, you know, you have so many good stories, you should write them down. He said, nah.
Yeah.
But he ended up writing a book, so did Bob Denver. And lots of interesting stories. You must have tons of interesting stories to tell.
I must, you know. I have to go to a hypnotist to get them out, maybe, or something.
Was childhood fun? I mean, did you have a good time as a kid, or was it more work and
I had so much fun, I never had time to write it down in my diary. You know, and I tried. I have some diaries. I would get one every year, and I would make a few entries, and then I would get very, you know, regular about it for maybe a couple of weeks. But then it just got away from me, and I remember thinking at the time, boy, I should write all this down. Or I look back at the when I have looked at the diaries, mostly it's a lot of you know, factual information. Today we worked on episode such and such.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, that's it.
You know, but you look at all these kids that were child actors. Laurie Chapin is the subject of a bio this week on E! And the life she led, the little girl from Father Knows Best, ended up being a hooker.
Oh.
And all these different people who really had a hard time. Ron Howard.
I know her, and she's a terrific lady.
She's great.
Lady.
And she's certainly got her life together. Ron Howard, of course, is a great example of someone who was a child actor who's done great and always
there are,
has.
There are others. It's, well, you know, everybody's life changes. And everybody, you know, has bumpy roads. No matter where you come from, you know, life is not easy. And a lot of people who experience show business in their youth are not interested in continuing with it. It's simply no more than that. Also, a lot of people are too intelligent to continue acting.
Hmm.
I mean, it's a lot of fun, but there are too many other ways to make a living that are more secure. And especially if you have a college education. And I think, especially in our society and in this country, there's just so many opportunities. There are a lot of former actors that have gone on to other careers and are very successful in those fields.
Mm, that's
doctors,
true.
Doctors,
yep.
Lawyers,
yep.
Or whatever.
Entrepreneurs like
entrepreneurs.
Like Max Baer Jr., who's doing incredibly well. We just had him on a few weeks ago. You actually kind of left showbiz and went into rodeo, didn't you?
Well, I didn't really think that I was leaving show business at the time. But in a sense, I did kind of accidentally or without, because I was never around to go on auditions. And maybe I felt I didn't need to go on auditions. I did get some jobs without having to go on auditions. You know, people knew who I was,
mm-hmm.
in the business, and they would just hire me. And I did some episodic television and a few movies. But I was I had been an actor for so long, and it's not that I was really tired of it. It's just that I was curious what it would be like to do something in life that was real. And competing at rodeos was a lot of fun to a young man like myself, and quite different from, you know, the acting world.
Yeah.
And it had a wonderful atmosphere that I enjoyed being around. at that time, and I still do, but it's just my interests have changed since then, and that's no longer a primary interest of mine. Music has always been my foremost love, I guess, because I've always been a singer. I mean, I started out as a singer, and the acting kind of came along, but I always wanted to be a singer. When I was a kid, the first thing I remember doing is listening to records on my phonograph and learning the songs, listening to them over and over again to learn the words.
Talking about your songs, we have to go and take a break, and as we go to break and come back, we're going to hear some music of yours. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how you connected with Bob Keane and what you learned early on that's helped you now.
I wish
you had
some of my music.
I wish we did too, but we will the next time. We're going to have the whole thing from you. So we'll come back right after this with more with Johnny Crawford.
Everyone in town just wants to put me down.